Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, TASS in Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Hoping you're setting your dial while you're seeing that little WBAL logo there on the pitcher's mound. We'll be number six or number five. We don't need to be number one, but we know we're number one in your hearts. The Maryland Lottery bringing together the Maryland Crab Cake Tour beginning next Tuesday. We're going to be at Costas on the Peninsula, the now Trap Peninsula. We'll be talking a lot about the bridge and a lot about the future and probably some old times and probably my dad and a whole bunch of other stuff. That is on Tuesday the 9th. We'll be there in the morning up till 2 o'clock. Think lunchtime, 2 o'clock, the Orioles take on the Red Sox. We're kind of there to eat the crab cakes and have some crab soup, maybe drink a beer or two with Mr. Costas and watch the Orioles play. That's the 9th. The 12th, we'll be at Fadley's. I'm wearing my Fadley shirt, established in 1887, but it was in 2024 that they moved into the new Lexington Market. If you haven't been to the new place, I went on opening day. It opened on opening day. You're not that far off the curb. You know, it's been 2 weeks. You come down and see us on the 12th on Friday. We will be live, like Brent Musburger live from 2 until 5. This guy will wake up at some point. These late nights, early morning. I wonder why they kick these games off at 6:30 just because we're all old and geriatric at this point. And some of us have press credentials and have to like be there after the game and go into the locker room and do all that stuff. But at least they're not like kicking it around during rain delays. There are no more 4-hour games. The game started at 6:30. So even when there's like a quick walk off, you might still get home to Shrewsbury by 11 o'clock. Maybe. I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, no, that's summarized it pretty well. These 6:35 starts they're a little weird. I mean, especially for those of us who remember when games started at 7:35 or 8:05, right? I mean, way back when. But it is nice. Still had a 2-hour, 35-minute game. I know a lot of fans don't care about time of game in the way that reporters are constantly monitoring it. But a really exciting finish to Monday night's game. Jordan Westberg hits the walk-off home run. Definitely some late inning drama. We saw the bullpen tested for the first time in Yennier Cano and Craig Kimbrell. Results were mixed. Nothing to panic over, I would say, but certainly not seamless. But Jordan Westberg comes up big.
I don't want Cano loading the bases every time and having to play Don Stanhouse in the eighth inning. I mean, you know, that wasn't good. I mean, the outcome was fine.
Right. But, I mean, that's why I said it was bumpy. I mean, he pitched into trouble and pitched out of it. So, I mean, and look, that's going to happen. I mean, you're not going to have guys that are perfect, but I've said throughout the offseason and really from the moment that they acquired Corbin Burns and then 2 weeks later we find out about Bradish and Means and knowing that meant Tyler Wells was going to the rotation, knowing that meant Cole Irvin was going to go to the rotation, at least to start the season, and knowing that D.L. Hall was in Milwaukee as a result of the Burns trade.
And a starter, no less, right?
Right. But the questions were going to be about the bullpen, at least for me. So Cano gets out of it. Craig Kimbrell blows the save, although look at how that played out. It was a bloop single, and I guess Kansas City has the next Jerod Dyson coming off the bench, pinch running. He steals two bases and scores on a sac fly. So, again, nothing to be alarmed about with the bullpen, but thank goodness for Jordan Westberg, right? I mean, he hits the two-run homer on an 0-2 pitch. First walk-off he's hit in his baseball life. He said he had never hit a walk-off home run at any level. I assume that meant Little League, as he reflected on it in the Orioles club. But certainly, a team like Kansas City, where I think they're better than they've been, but still not a team that you view as great by any stretch of the imagination. You want to get off to the series, which rain is going to be the big story, as we talked about the other day. Lots of questions as far as whether they'll get the rest of the series in or when will they. But they get the opener, and certainly a big moment for Jordan Westberg and a game that felt very similar to what we saw last year, right? A close game, and we've talked about it a lot last year, a different hero every night, and it's always good when a young guy does it because, we've talked a lot about Jordan Westberg the last year and a half, 2 years, even before he debuted. So a guy gets that kind of a moment. You always wonder, okay, will that springboard him to be even better, be more consistent, have more confidence at the major league level? And definitely you could tell it meant a lot to him in the Orioles clubhouse after the 6-4 win.
Well, let's talk about that because He is an interesting guy. And listen, for any of the listeners out there who I'm doing a 25th anniversary documentary. So if you just found me on YouTube and you're like, who's the loudmouth guy with the long hair sometimes, shaves sometimes, and is a little wacky holding up lottery tickets amongst other things. We've been doing baseball a long, long, long time. You and I have been doing it a decade and a half together. I've been doing it for 4 decades next to Ken Rosenthal and Tim Kurkjian back in the day, where I was the guy up all night taking dictation from Ken Rosenthal, doing game stories. And there's game stories and sidebars and notes and columns. I think like a newspaper guy. I think you and I, if we both had press credentials and we're there and we're fully dedicated to it, there'd be a column every night, a notes column there. You know, I think like that because I was trained like that by Jack Gibbons. But there's a point for you and I and what we do here at WNST and Baltimore Positive, where you're writing, you do your notes, we do our games, we hear Palmer and Ben McDonald, you're there, I'm here, I'm still locked out, we'll see. One of the things about not being locked out is if I came to 45 games, I sort of would miss McDonald and Palmer calling the games. I think they do a really good job, and I think Kevin Brown does a really good job too. But all that being said, and I learn a lot. I learn a lot watching the games. I really do. I feel like I might be more educated watching on TV than I would be there unless I had some combination thereof. But I watch a lot of baseball. My last name's Aparicio. But every single day, you and I get together, and there's a it's like the song. Every night there's a different star. That's the magic of Oriole baseball. And then we talk about these players and their pathway. And it's almost like chapters in a book. It's like when I wrote Purple Rain 2, it's like, let's tell the story of Jamil McClain. Let's tell the story of Kelechi Uson. Let's tell the story of Michael Orr. Let's tell the story of Jordan Westberg a little bit. Because, you know, he's a guy that in another time and age, he would have been one of their shining stars. I compare him to Rich Dower, right? Like when I see him, I see Rich Dower. I feel it that way. I feel like he's never going to be the biggest star on this team based on the crop they have here. But in another era, he would have been the guy Weaver was trying to get in and make a position player. And you'd say, here's a Hammond Egger, maybe a JJ Hardy type of, you know, ceiling. I don't, you tell me what the ceiling would be on him, but different positions, moving him around. He's not, you know, he doesn't have a place yet. They're trying to figure all this out, third base, where it's going to be, what kind of player he's going to be. I don't think he's going to the Hall of Fame, but damn, he just won a game, you know, and we're talking about him today in a way that had he not, maybe by the end of next week, we'd be talking about him and saying, all right, what do we got here? Because I don't know what we got here, but I don't think the ceiling's where we think offensively it is for the other three big stars in Rutschman, Henderson, and Holiday's not even here yet, but he's the guy. He'll be the dude.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about really special talents there. In the case of Rutschman and Holiday, first overall picks. So, I mean, you know, Jordan Westberg was, I think, 30th overall. It was the end of the first round in 2020, coming out of college, and he was a top 100 prospect last year. Going into 2023, which obviously he debuted in what late June, I think it was. So, I think the thing you like about Jordan Westberg is his versatility. I mean, he can play second base, he plays third base, he plays shortstop. You know, he's primarily a shortstop, which in the minor leagues, which is kind of the theme of how the Orioles and many teams, for that matter, draft. You know,
Well,
you
when I
draft
think
guys
old
up the
school,
middle.
I want to compare it. Bobby Grich would have been a shortstop, but Belanger was here, so he became a second baseman. You know what I
Well,
mean?
there's
Like,
that.
and
Right.
that's just, and you think of him as a second baseman, but his rookie card said shortstop, you know? And the same thing with Ripken, it's shortstop and third base, and there were questions. I mean, for any of these guys who were, I mean, Manny Machado, any of these guys, A-Rod, Jeter, you know, and A-Rod, when they played together, you can't both play shortstop, right? Like, it's an amazing gift. And you know what I mean? And I played a little ball and you played a little, the ball coming off the bat and third base and shortstop and the reaction time and all of that stuff. These guys that are that versatile that can play all the positions and play them at a plus plus, that's you know, it I tell you what, Henderson picked the ball, Mountcastle picked the ball. We'll talk about the walk-off home run in the game, but there was gloves. There was defense on this team that will be the fifth thing we talk about around here because we're going to continue to talk about the bullpen and put a lot of focus on that. But this team plays defense, and it's because of this and Mateo and guys that are glove guys too.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, shaky defense in the first inning, but after
Yeah,
that they
fair enough.
defended very, very well. But going back to Westberg, I mean, it's a mindset that you have as an organization to want to draft shortstops, catchers, and center fielders, because the mindset is they're going to be the best athletes, and most of them are not going to stay at shortstop or stay at center field, and in some cases they won't stay at catcher. In fact, Melendez for the Royals was actually at one point he's a fielder because they still have Salvador Perez still ticking all these years later. But the point is, when you do that, is if they can play at shortstop, the mindset is they can play third base, or they can play second base, or they might be able to play outfield. If they can play center field, chances are they can play left to right. So when you draft a left fielder, like the Orioles did with DJ Stewart way back when, if he can't play left field, there's basically one place he can go, and that's DH. So, I mean, really, it's just, and it's not unique to the Orioles. It's the teams that really understand and probably have the most success drafting players. You do want shortstops. You do want guys up the middle. So in Westberg's case, he primarily played shortstop in the minor leagues, but learned how to play second, learned how to play third. And I think, you mentioned J.J. Hardy or someone like that. I mean, I don't know if Jordan Westberg is ever going to win a gold glove, but for one thing, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to move around. I think if you look at how the Orioles have mapped out where they stand with their current roster and where guys are at AAA, Jackson Holliday is going to be here at some point in the not too distant future. I think we all agree on that. Gunnar Henderson's not moving off of shortstop for the time being. Now, will Gunnar be a shortstop 5 years from now? That remains to be seen. But so you have second base and shortstop covered at least for the next 5 years. The question is third base, and you have Kobe Mayo also at AAA. So for Jordan, someone like Jordan Westberg, I think he's the kind of guy that probably will fit or in profile. Maybe as a super utility guy, maybe in a way that the Orioles used Melvin Mora in the early 2000s, where he was playing third, played a little bit, very briefly, some shortstop, could play second base, could play the corner outfield spots. So Jordan Westberg has worked at the corner outfield spots at times, although we haven't really seen that in the major leagues. So, as is the case with any young player, you have to see how it's going to translate. I mean, he's someone that. Go look at his minor league numbers. He hit for a lot of power. Last year, his rookie year with the Orioles, did not hit for a whole lot of power, but that doesn't mean he's not going to. And we certainly saw the power going out the right center field on Monday night. So, he's the kind of player that I think could be a starter for them for the next 5 years, and maybe longer than that. Or he could be a guy that might be the maybe for easy comparison's sake. Maybe he's the one that settles into the Ramon Arias role over the last 3 years, where Arias, we've seen him move all over the diamond, right? All three infield, actually all four infield spots. He's even made starts at first base. So I think Westberg, maybe that's his best spot. If you're assuming Jackson Holliday works out, if you're assuming Kobe Mayo works out. So, but I think once Holliday's here, you're probably going to be seeing more of Westberg at third base, which he can play there also. So he's already started games at multiple spots. He even played shortstop for an inning on Easter Sunday. So,
and hit a walk-off.
And hit a walk-off on Monday. So it's good to see. I mean, it is. It takes some time. As much as we have seen prospects come in here, and Adley Rutschman struggled for what, a month? And from that point on, he's been one of the most valuable players in the American League. Gunnar Henderson struggled for about 2 months. And from that point, he's been one of the best players in the American League. Sometimes the development's a little more gradual, and it's been that way a little bit for Westberg, although he's still been in the major leagues less than a year. Let's keep that in mind. But these guys, when they get to the majors, their development is not finished. They're not a finished product. That's why I think it's important to not lose sight of that and to not expect great results right away. I mean, I think. I look at where Westberg is now and look at Colton Cowser, who hasn't started any of the first four games. It's something that I'd like to see. And I've said this going back to the offseason. I'd like to see him be kind of viewed as a fourth starting outfielder and rotate him in, give Hayes and Mullins a couple more nights off here and there. I think that could help them in a big picture sense. But what it also does is it gives someone like Cowser more regular playing time to develop. These guys have to finish developing in the majors, and if they're sitting on the bench,
Well,
it's
this is where I was
difficult.
going to ask about Westberg, and especially his shuttle that he was on last year, and now where Cowser is, and the exact reason Holiday's not here. Where would they put? I mean, let's dude, there's nine spots. That's they bat, right? That's where they are. And we can sit here and say, Cowser, Cowser, Stowers, all of these. Okay, well, you've got Mullins, Hayes, and Santander. They're going to play, and they're here, and they're being paid to be here, and they're is not might be's, because Westbrook's still a might be, Cowser's still a might be. I mean, like, and to your point, when there might be's and they're not getting ABs and they're not playing and they're coming in and they're pinch hitting and it's weather's awful and there's going to be rain delays and this and that and primary guys aren't going to get bats. Like, I do wonder with all of these top. That's why I said about Westbrook in another organization in Cincinnati, Seattle, wherever, he's their third baseman, second baseman. They bring him up. They're like, hey, you're as good as you're top 100. You're one of our two, three best prospects, and we don't have any guys going to the Hall of Fame. This team has three or four guys that people are talking about, like they're going to the Hall of All-Star games at least, right? And the Hall of making a lot of money and decisions Mr. Rubenstein's going to have to make with his money at some point. And Scott Boras, great, but and you want to win every night, and they do a good job of doing that the last year so far. But there is attrition through all of this, and there's forget the Uriases and the Mateos who also think I have a career here and I'm a player, which is why I saw like Adam Frazier and I see Hicks. These guys that were contributors, we've already seen them on other teams because there ain't no at bats for you anymore, which we can't get Cowser. We got top 100 prospects, got top 50 prospects, we got top five prospects we can't get onto the diamond. They're playing in Norfolk down in the cold right now because we think we're that good. I mean, like, pinch me. There's a new owner. I mean, like, it's crazy how good this is and the conversations we're going to have about guys that aren't quad A. Can we find at bats for this guy or give Curtis Goodwin a chance? This is like, these are Westbrook's a major league player. Now, whether he's going to hit 290 or 240 and, how long he's going to, but in another organization, my point would be we wouldn't be talking about at bats for Colton Cowser. He just would be the left fielder or whatever and be playing, and that would be that.
Right, no question about it. And that's, look, it's a great problem to have, but it is something you have to figure out. And that's why when I, and I'm using Cowser as the example now, but Westbrook was this guy last year. When he gets called up, he wasn't playing every day. And I think it's tough because you're in a position where, like, for example, Adam Frazier had a really good first half, did not have a good second half last year. Go look at the numbers. He didn't hit the ball.
But
So there
while he's
really
hitting the
was.
ball, you leave him in there and you're blocked because you got a real major leaguer
Sure.
and they brought him in. And
Sure.
holy hell, we might win this year. We're pretty good. Like,
Right.
there was
But
none of that
that's
thought until May of last year.
sure. But there's also the roster churn and there's the evolution of your roster. And because you just said it, I mean, they didn't re-sign Adam Frazier because there was no reason to, because you have Jordan Westberg at the very least in the major leagues and you have Jackson Holliday who's going to be right behind him. But the point I was making with Cowser, which is kind of, there was almost some serendipity with the fact that Westberg hits the walk-off, Adam Frazier's on the other side playing for the Royals, and Colton Cowser is kind of where Westberg was last year, that he's kind of behind a veteran guy. I guess the point that I'm making with some of this and where it does pose a challenge, albeit a great challenge, a very positive situation to have if you're Brandon Hyde and Mike Elias, is you do have to balance between the known commodities, but also recognizing that there might be someone better coming along. And I guess my point is not to say with Colton Cowser that he suddenly becomes a starter and Austin Hayes or Cedric Mullins goes to the bench. But what I am saying is Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins so good that they play 150 plus times a year? Well, Hayes is worn down the last two second halves. Cedric Mullins is coming off of a really difficult injury plagued season. So for me, my perspective, my train of thought is why not work Cowser in a little bit more and have kind of view it as though you have four starting outfielders and, he plays three times a week. He plays four times a week. It's okay for Austin Hayes to be on the bench once or twice a week. It's okay for Cedric Mullins to be on the bench once
Well,
or
we did
twice a week.
Loewenstein and Reneke here
Sure,
forever,
sure. And
right?
to be clear, when I say that, Colton Cowser has to produce, but I don't think we should. I don't think it's, on the flip side, I don't think it's fair to evaluate him that he's sitting on the bench and then he pinch hits in the eighth inning and he strikes out and say, well, that's why he's not playing. You know what I'm saying? So, but that's part of this. And look, there was a time when Jorge Mateo was the starting shortstop. He's not anymore, right? I mean, that's evident. There was a time when Ramon Arias, you know, there was no questions asked. He was going to start for them because they didn't have these young infielders in Baltimore just yet. That's changed. You know, he's still playing, but you know, if he doesn't produce, he's going to be on the bench, and they're going to call up one of these other young infielders from Norfolk. So there's competition. There really is, and I think that for me is where Brendan Hyde does have the challenge in terms of guys that you trust, veteran players that you trust, but they're not all stars. So when you do have these young guys come up, to me as an organization, you do have a responsibility to not just undisputed, no questions asked, the young guy plays every single day. At the same time, you don't want that young guy coming up and sitting on the bench, you know? So that's where, you know,
it's
early
precarious end. And it's so unique to this organization and to our fan base, especially, and to you and I talking about it. Cause like I said, in any other hour, in any other year, Colton Cowser would be considered the guy that they look at as the next Austin Hayes, right? Like they'd say, we're going to
be the lone hope. Yeah, yeah. He'd be the, you know, he'd be the savior, right? I mean, that's really where they would have been. I mean, look at how the Orioles approached it with Nick Markakis, his rookie year back in, he didn't hit at all the first couple months. Under the circumstances where they find themselves now, he would have been back in the minors. I mean, we saw this with Cowser last summer. He got sent back down. Now, he really, really struggled. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I disagreed with the Orioles doing that. But again, it is finding that sweet spot between winning games on the field, but also wanting to recognize that you do have this really talented flush system with all these prospects that, yeah, not all of them are going to make it, and not all of them are going to play for you, as we saw with Joey Ortiz and DL Hall getting sent to Milwaukee in the Burns deal. But at the same time, you also don't want to be in a position where you're so attached to veteran players when there might be someone better coming along. So, you know, that's just
– well, especially as they're getting more expensive too.
Right, right. And look, I mean, that's a great problem. You know, that roster turn, that's what Tampa Bay has done so well. And I'm not saying the Orioles want to model the Rays payroll.
But it's no different than the Ravens. You're not going to pay them all.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you shouldn't. And you shouldn't. Even if you have the money to do it, there are guys that you shouldn't pay. I mean,
because there's another Kyle Hamilton and another Tyler Lindgren. And at this point, they haven't paid anybody here out of this group, right?
Right.
From the on the baseball team, like nobody's gotten paid yet. And, you know, picking who's going to play tonight in the order is hard enough for Brendan Hyde. But picking who gets the first $250 million amongst this pack is going to be – because – by the way, free plug for what we do here at NST. I'm literally back on the baseball train where I'm calling Alan McCallum and Barry Bloom and Maury Brown and all my baseball mafia guys to bring them on to see what they think and how they're feeling about all of this and what they're seeing from afar. And it's amazing how Jeff Montgomery says you got to sign Rutschman. Like he's a pitcher, right? And a really good one. Got to have the catcher, man. You know, like that's your leader, right? So like he's positioning Rutschman, and you would say Henderson probably at this moment, but we haven't even seen Holiday play. And by August, you might be like, no, he's got to get the first, you know, and on based on their arrival and their seniority. And like, you look at Hayes as being the grandfather in the room, right? He might be the first guy off the ledge. Certainly Santander's never getting a bag here. They got good value out of him. They're never going to give him a lot of money, you know? So there are guys that you just know are going to go because we've been watching baseball long enough. And we saw, you always mentioned Trey Mancini because the fan base, because of cancer and his relationship and they love him. And same thing with BJ Surhoff here. You know, there have been emotional departures here, but they're going to be departures here one way or another, and they might happen before they dive on the pile.
Well, that's why, I mean, I go back to the end of last season when we started looking ahead to the offseason. One of the first things that people were talking about, you and I talked about it as well, they had 16 guys that were eligible for arbitration, and at that point there was a thought of, wow, not all these guys are going to be back. I mean, just from a roster flexibility standpoint. Yes, from a financial standpoint, where you start talking about bench players and how much they're making compared to handing that role to a young guy who's making less and probably has more upside and is younger, they brought everyone back. I mean, in fact, I think Ryan McKenna was the only one that didn't make, you know, and he was out of options, was DFA'd, and now he's back in the system, albeit, you know, outrighted to AAA Norfolk. But the point at that point in time, I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have guessed that Mateo and Arias would be back in 2024. I would have thought there was a decent chance one of the outfielders would have been packaged in a trade to maybe get a bullpen arm or a starting pitcher or whatever, something else you needed on the roster, just because of now the fact that they have Kowser on the roster. They have Heston Kerstad, who's by all intents and purposes ready at AAA. Stowers, we've talked about a lot. So, you know, you kind of thought that there might be an opportunity or two for Elias to make a deal, you know, to trade either some of your established guy, veteran guys that you know you're not going to re-sign, or to trade one of those prospects. So it didn't happen. And look, organizational depth is a good thing. You know, and I've mentioned, I use the outfield as an example because it kind of feels like we're either at or on or just about at the inflection point with just these veteran guys they've had that you love and they've been around and they were here when they were terrible, but also understanding they've got really good young outfielders in their system.
And they need pitching.
That are ready to play. Exactly. So that's where I've said, and Mancini's such a great example, and it transcends, right? Because that went beyond baseball. But at the same time, and I say this with no disrespect, because I love Trey Mancini to this day, look at how his career has gone since the Orioles traded him. If they had given him a 3 or 4 year deal, like some, and I don't think too many fans thought this way, but at least a sizable portion did, right now we'd be looking at that deal and saying, that's not going well. I mean, Trey struggling to stay in the majors. I mean, that's where he is at this point. He's struggling for a job. I mean, that's kind of where he's been the last couple years. And if you're Mike Elias, that's where you can't be sentimental with Mancini or Hayes or Mullins. You know, Santander, I'm more inclined to at least explore an extension with him. And he's not getting $150 million. Let's be clear.
From anybody. The question is, where's the market?
Right, exactly. But what he gives them, you know, which is middle of the order power, he's improved from a walk standpoint. You know, he still plays an okay right field, but I think he probably profiles more as first base, DH, occasional right field. You know, I kind of think that's where he's going to be as he, you know, is getting, you know, almost to 30. But he's been really good for them the last couple of years. And I think that's where you're a little more torn. You know, Mullins, the injuries concern me. I mean, look, he was phenomenal a couple of years ago, but, you know, it was a struggle for him to stay on the field last year. Hayes was an all-star last year, but second straight year, he fell off a little bit. This isn't me saying to bench those guys. This isn't me saying to jettison them today. But when you're thinking in terms of where the organization is now, where you're going the rest of this year, and certainly where you're going over the next few years, you know, I look at the incumbents in the outfield, and yeah, I don't see re-signing any of them long-term, other than if you get something that really makes sense financially, that's a really good value signing. So, because I think you just have these young guys that are ready to play, and it's tough, right? Because you know, you even made the point, you have these known commodities who have been good, and at times they've been really good. But they're not perfect players either. So how do you mix in Kowser? How do you mix in Heston Kerstad? How do you kind of see what you have with them at the major league level to see if you say, okay, that's a guy.
It's not time to experiment. You're expected to win.
Well, I understand that, but you're also you're always trying to get better, though, too. You don't want to be stagnant.
But best
right?
guys got to play every night, which is why Aaron Hicks was around here last year, soaking up some of those at-bats when Kowser wasn't good enough, right?
Well, but this isn't pass-fail. There are some guys in Gunnar Henderson's the best guy every night, right? Gunnar Henderson's going to play 162 games if it makes sense for him to play 162 games. And they'll probably, in this day and age, he'll probably get 5 or 6 games off, something like that, right? Assuming he doesn't have an injury or anything like that. But I don't look at Cedric Mullins or Austin Hayes and say that those are guys that are going to be 155 game players. I don't. I don't think their production dictates that. That's where I say there are some guys that I think are most productive when they're playing 130 or 135 games. And that's, to me, that's where you can work in Kowser more. That's where you can find out about guys more. So I disagree with you a little bit in saying, well, the best guy plays every night. No, I mean, that's too simplistic to look at it that way. In the same way that Adley Rutschman
doesn't catch every
single game. I
agree. When it's 112 degrees in July and you're playing your fifth game in 4 days. Yeah, I got it. Right.
Right. Right. So I again, for me, you do have to balance those things because that's otherwise you would never your roster would never change, right? You would say, okay, these are my best guys and I'm going to continue to play them. But then, well, what about this guy that has tore up Triple A? I don't know if he's going to develop if he's only playing once a week, is my
You're
point.
making me
So,
laugh because, like, Buck didn't have these problems,
oh,
riding
no
his
doubt.
horses because he had no bench, he had no nothing. It was just sort of these are guys, go play,
Right. Right. And let me be clear. When I'm talking, I don't want to make it sound like I'm a broken record just about Couser. That's kind of the example I'm using right here. And that's the good challenge that the Orioles have right now because, yeah, you have these established veterans, but you do get to a point where, hey, Gunnar Henderson wasn't the starting shortstop at this time a year ago. Jorge Mateo was. And they're a way better team having Gunnar Henderson as their starting shortstop and Mateo being a role player now. I mean, they just
Well, your
are.
point
So.
is Couser can't hit a walk-off unless he's on the field. Westberg just hit a walk-off because he's getting at bats instead of Urias and Mateo. He's now put himself into the position where that versatility that these other guys also have, that, and he's cheaper and more upside, like all of that, and top 100. And that, but there is a realization that you're in that clubhouse every day. That's a tough thing all the way around when starters become not starters, and when Mullins comes in and says, I'm not playing tonight. Well, you know what? You know, like, but and also managing expectations, which you talk so much about with Elias mismanaging fans' expectations on Jackson Holliday. I hope in his own locker room, whatever song they're singing to Hayes and Mullins is, and Couser and Stowers and Mayo, and like all those guys, whatever song they're singing, they come up and sing that song. And that's part of Rubenstein and ownership and just like managing it well, because guys get their feelings hurt. There's a lot of money involved here with every at bat, and you don't walk off the island and like all of that stuff. Frazier knows he can't win a championship in Kansas City, but at this point in his career, he had to go take a job there, right? Like, so, there is a point for all of this where Hayes and Mullins have waited and waited and waited to pile dive, and here are two, guys on the radio saying maybe he won't be around for that. Maybe one of them won't be around for that. And that's kind of a different concept for the fans who go out there every night. Eddie Lauer wouldn't like that.
And again, just and I'm doing the math in my head right now. You have three outfield spots, right? And this is simplistic because you have the DH and not every guy can play center field. So you can't move everyone around perfectly, but you have three outfield spots. Let's just go 160 games just to make the math a little bit easier. It's 480 starts in the outfield. Well, you can have three guys try to handle that, knowing you're going to have injuries, knowing guys are going to wear down. And we've seen that at times with some of these guys. Or you can think about it in terms of having a fourth guy in that equation. And I'm not saying it would be a perfect four-way split, but that could be 120 or 130 starts for Hayes or Mullins, whatever it might be. The point is, does that keep them fresher? Does that keep them more productive over the course of the full season? And look, everyone's listening right now and saying, Luke, you're out of your mind. You're talking about 4 games into the season. I was saying this before the season, and I'm just saying that's what I, if it were me, that's what I would envision. But that's also assuming guys have to produce. Colton Couser, if you're going to play him 3 or 4 times a week, which I'm absolutely advocating for, he does have to produce. But at the on the flip side, if he's not going to start games and his only role is pinch hitting in the bottom of the eighth inning like he did Monday night and he strikes out, I don't think we should judge him on that so harshly to the point where he stays on the bench then.
He's got to
So
get more than six at
especially,
bats a week.
right,
I'm with you.
especially, yeah, especially when Hayes and Mullins are kind of off to a slow start. And look, when someone is red hot, someone's white hot at the plate, of course I'm not going to sit them down then. But the point is, there's a little more of a rotation that I would like to see. And look, that doesn't mean they won't do that come even the 3rd week of April. If Colton Couser gets a, starts on Tuesday or Wednesday or starts in Pittsburgh a couple times this weekend and hits 2 home runs and drives in 4 runs, he's probably going to be out there more. So yeah, he's got to produce. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But to your point, and to bring it full circle with the Westberg heroics on Monday night. Boy, it's fun when you have so many different options. It's fun to contemplate what you're going to do from a roster standpoint because it's not just about, okay, who am I going to pay? It's also, I have these assets and I have too many. So what can I do then with these assets to go out and get another bullpen arm, which I absolutely want to see them do? Or if they need another starting pitcher to package maybe a veteran along with some prospects to get that, and then you clear the deck a little bit in the process. I mean, there are a lot of possibilities here, and that's what is so exciting about this baseball team and where they are right now, and where they're going in the foreseeable future. And oh yeah, you have a new ownership group in place that I'm hoping is willing to spend more money and to make more long-term commitments for the right players.
Luke Jones covers the Orioles, the Ravens, local sports at Baltimore. Luke, we're together out at Baltimore Positive. We will be together next Friday, the 12th, at Fadley's from 2 until 3. I'll be there 2 to 5 live. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Probably have some Pac-Man giveaways by then. On the 9th, next Tuesday, we'll be at Costas. We will not be live, but we'll be doing Baltimore Positive during the morning hours leading up till 2 p.m. when the Orioles take on the Red Sox. Then we're going to cut all broadcasting off and open up the taps and the spigots and probably have some delicious oysters Rockefeller or some pit beef, something magical, as we discuss the Key Bridge and the loss of the Key Bridge. That will be on the 9th. I'm going to be doing some politics around here beginning this week with the elections coming up. Reached to a lot of folks on opening day, saw a lot of politicians and politician wannabes and blah, 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 blah. So we'll be getting all that going as well as a lot of sports and a lot of baseball. Barry Bloom came on this week. Alan McCallum, our longtime baseball insider, we discussed the end of the Angelos era. If you've missed Janet Marie Smith or you didn't hear Tom Lavero, please go back, check all that stuff out. Luke and I are after this each and every day on baseball. So whether Westberg hits a walk-off or whether it rains or doesn't, Jeff Montgomery is here this week talking some Royals baseball and talking about changes in ownership. He's been through three of them now in Kansas City as a player and as a broadcaster and had and also owns the sports radio station. So we share that in common in Kansas City, and we've known each other for 30 years. So it's a great, great conversation. So putting all this cool stuff together, lots of great guests coming in here this week. My friend Greg Abel is going to come on and talk about Free the Birds and the legacy of that and all sorts of stuff. So stick with us. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.